Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I really believe that teachers are a critical component of helping students find their creative voice. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast, is how to make that happen. I share some of the mistakes I've made along the way. I share some stories, some practical ideas. And with this new year, I'm going to be also doing some interviews and interviewing different people as well. So again, welcome to this podcast. And before we get started on this idea of visual thinking, I want to share a word from our sponsor, Wipebook. Are flip charts a part of your teacher toolkit for distance learning? Cool, but the problem with conventional flip charts is this. Number one, they are awfully expensive. And number two, they are not eco-friendly. One use and they are done. Check out this cost-effective and interesting alternative that we just recently tested called the Wipebook flip chart. It is a marriage between a conventional flip chart and a whiteboard. And it comes in 20 surfaces per set, 10 double-sided sheets, one side plain and the other side a graph, you know, for all you math folks. Each sheet is 2 feet by 3 feet. It also integrates with the free Wipebook Scan app, which you can download from the App Store or Google Play so that you can digitize and share your work to Google Drive and other popular cloud storage options. For all you teachers that are tired of wasting paper and want to give Wipebook Flipchart a try as either a reusable flipchart or a whiteboard alternative, you can check out wipebook.com/creativeclassroom for up to 30% off your first purchase. They sent this to me and I absolutely love it. I've been using it in my class. I've been using it with the trainings that I do with teachers at the K-12 level. I just love being able to make the thinking visible. I love being able to make charts and graphs when I want to, but I can also sketch things, you know, like you would on a whiteboard, and then do vocabulary like you would on a flip chart. And so I use it all the time. I love it. I think it's a great tool for virtual learning. It also is a great tool for a physical classroom when you're doing, you know, blended learning or you're doing hybrid learning, especially those of you who have kind of both at the same time. So check it out again, wipebook.com/creativeclassroom. It's easy for a virtual class session to slip into a talking head approach. You turn on your camera and your students see your face. At times you might toggle back and forth between your slideshow and your camera, but it can easily slip into something that is mostly just auditory. You talk, students talk in their breakout rooms, and then you talk again. But learning should also be visible. When students process information visually and they make their thinking visible, they improve in their metacognition and the learning tends to stick. So today I want to talk about how we can make this happen in virtual learning. And I want to point out that it takes a lot of intentionality to really do this well. I mean, this has been something that I my default is to go onto Zoom and to lead, a virtual class and to maybe turn on a slideshow. I would say probably 90% of the classes that I teach or the professional development that I teach as well is, includes visuals and slideshows, and I try to be intentional. But I just want to point out, it takes a lot of intentionality to do this well. And I think it's harder because video conferences really are meant to be, they were designed for conversation and not necessarily for learning. And so we have to be really intentional in how we plan things so that we can make the learning visible for our students. Now, I first learned about visible thinking, gosh, it was probably 6 years ago when I read this book that I still love called Making Thinking Invisible. A colleague of mine had recommended the book, and I realized that I'd been using specific visible thinking routines for years after observing a colleague who was an expert at getting her students to think visibly and to really articulate what their learning was. And so I had been integrating these elements of visual thinking and visible thinking into our design thinking and inquiry-based projects. It was part of how we did curation, part of how we did research, brainstorming. And I'd been using these different protocols and strategies and not even realizing where they came from, which was most of these had come from making thinking visible. Now, I want to clarify something here. Visible thinking has nothing to do with learning styles. Right? Researchers have already debunked the idea that certain students are visual learners, others are auditory, kinesthetic, that idea. Instead, we all process information by using all of our senses. So that's really important that we understand that all of these different approaches are necessary. And visible thinking isn't entirely visual. It incorporates auditory, reading, kinesthetic elements as well. The core idea, though, is that you can see the learning happen. It's to capture and understand the thinking process in the moment. I love the way that the authors of The Power of Making Thinking Visible put it. They said, we want not only to get our students to think, but also to understand the thinking process as it is unfolding so that we can support it, prompt it, and grow it, right? End quote. This process focuses not only on what students are learning, but on how they are learning. As students engage in that process, they become more aware of their learning and they have that deeper metacognition. In addition, visible thinking can improve student engagement, student achievement as well. In my own experience teaching middle school and now at the university level, I've noticed that the learning tends to stick. Now, I don't have any research to back that one up. I just find that the learning lasts longer when they've made it visible. Students are able to organize their thinking and retain information for longer periods of time and at a deeper level. So with that in mind, I want to share some specific ways that we can do this. Now, if you haven't checked out the books Making Thinking Visible and The Power of Making Thinking Visible, there are links in the show notes and on the blog post that goes with this. And you can also check out the Visible Thinking website run by Harvard's Project Zero. They have all of these really cool protocols that you can check out and figure out, you know, where you're going to integrate those into your, you know, instruction. So here are some ideas. Number one, use visuals to spark new learning. Students can use visible thinking strategies as a way to make sense out of their new learning and generate questions as they explore, their research topics or their design thinking projects or as they craft their own experiments. And here's how it works. A teacher provides a video, a graph, a photo, whatever it may be, and that is a provocation for deeper learning. This might tie into students' prior knowledge and it might spark their curiosity. And then the strategy that you use is a see, think, wonder. Students answer the question, what do I see? What do I think about, and what does it make you wonder? Individually, students might answer these questions in something like a Flipgrid video, as a comment to the class learning management system, or in their journals. Next, they can discuss these questions in a small group via the breakout room option in your video chat. In some cases, they might do something more open-ended. Students might look at a photograph in social studies and answer, what is going on in this picture? And it is much more open-ended in that moment. You might provide a graphic organizer with the five senses and have students focus on what they would see, feel, hear, and taste in the moment. I also like the step inside routine, and this comes from Making Thinking Visible as well. You give students a picture or a video, and you have them answer, what can this person or thing, and they can take the role of a person or an object in the picture. So I want to be really clear. It can be either one. What can this person or thing see, observe, or notice? What might this person or thing know, understand, hold true, or believe? What might this person or thing care deeply about? And then what might this person or thing wonder about or question? Again, students can debrief these ideas in a breakout room. They could fill it out in a Google form or in a shared document. You might even have them sketch note their initial answers and do something like creating a mock interview between themselves and the person or object in the historical photo. But the idea of what you're going for is that you're using two different things. You're using visuals or videos to prompt the new learning, right? So it's visual in that way, but you're also using a specific guided structure to help facilitate the visible thinking as well, so that students can tell you what they're thinking and they can make it visible through answering these different questions. I also like how Dan Meyer uses something similar to this with the what can you do with this. Here students look at a picture or video and then they develop their own questions that they eventually solve. So those are all different ways that you can use the visible thinking strategies to start new learning. If you're into inquiry-based learning, I have a little visual that goes with this, but this can serve as the provocation. And then they will go through the whole inquiry process or cycle where they then ask questions, research, and gather data. That leads to analyzing the data, which leads to sharing their insights, and that will serve as a new provocation potentially, and the cycle will continue with deeper and deeper inquiry. So there's a lot of different ways to do that, but the goal is that you're using the visual, whether again it's a picture or a video, to spark their curiosity, to get them to answer questions, to make their thinking visible. Idea number two is to encourage students to create visuals to make sense out of their current learning. As students begin to make sense out of their learning, they can process their ideas using something like a sketch note. Sketch notes, also called visual note taking, consist of a blend of words, pictures, icons, and organizational cues. So arrows, circles, dotted lines, things like that. And students use this to make sense out of the ideas in the moment. Students might sketch note on a tablet or a digital notebook. I love, for example, the Remarkable 2. I use that all the time. They are not a sponsor. I'm not being paid from them. I just love Remarkables. Or on a sheet of paper. They might also do this during the direct instruction portion of a virtual meeting while they watch a video, listen to a podcast, or read an article. So there's a lot of different ideas for how you would have them sketch note. And again, they're using it in the moment to make their thinking visible. And the process of putting it onto paper is what allows them to wrestle with new ideas. And I think it's important that students understand that it doesn't have to look pretty, right? So it doesn't have to look beautiful. It doesn't have to look artistic. And as a teacher, you'll need to stress this to students, that you are not assessing the artistry of their sketch notes. Students might also create an infographic where they visualize facts and data to tell a compelling story. Some students will prefer the sketch note style that I just mentioned, and others will prefer using their own infographics, using kind of online programs. There's a lot of different great infographic programs online that you can check out. I'm not going to tell you which one, works best. In a language arts or digital media class, students can make sense out of more sequential information using something like a storyboard instead. I loved using that to help students make sense out of sequencing of information, not just as they would plan their documentaries or even plan a narrative that they were writing, but also to make sense out of things that they had read. Another option is a concept map. Here, students create a web of concepts and share the connections between ideas. A concept map is a bit like a snapshot of the mind, and it captures how students are making sense out of the ideas by really focusing on how they're conceptualizing the information. And the focus is on the connections between concepts that they're making. Unlike a traditional web, a concept map is not a spoke and wheel. Typically, there are multiple lines moving between ideas, and sometimes students will put verbs in between those ideas. Other times, they create symbols or use the shapes and the colors to create an organizational system for their maps. There are some great online mapping tools. There, I love CMap tools. I've used it for well over a decade. Gosh, it feels like it's been like 20 years, but I'm not sure how long. I love CMap tools, and I just think they work really well. It can be a little wonky. It can feel a little outdated, so they might want to sketch out their concept maps by hand. But again, there's a lot of other concept mapping programs. And what I love about concept maps is it's almost like getting a snapshot of the synaptic connections happening in their mind as they think. And there's actually a really great process for this in the book Making Thinking Visible. First, the teacher sets up the process by checking that students know what a concept map is and how it works. I always show different examples. This is where that using a white book works really well. You can draw your own concept map and they can see it. And then students generate a list of words connecting to the topic. Coming up with the words is critical because that gives them sort of the background vocabulary. It hooks it to prior knowledge. It provokes deeper meaning for them. So having a bank of words is really important here. And then I would also say, make sure that you have words as well so that if they don't generate certain words, you can add to it. Afterwards, students sort their words or ideas to see which ones are central. This process works well in pairs using the breakout room in a virtual meeting, but they can also do it by themselves. Students then create their concept maps by selecting specific words and drawing lines connecting the ideas. They can then elaborate on their ideas by creating subcategories and adding to the ideas with their words or phrases that weren't in the initial, you know, generation stage. So the idea is that they have this bank of words, they select the central ones, they start drawing lines between them, showing how that they are connected, and then they're also coming up with their own words or phrases that weren't in the initial, you know, bank of vocabulary at the beginning. Finally, they share their work, and this might be in something like an annotated video that they create using their smartphones, or it could be a screencast tool. Students can also post their concept maps to an LMS and discuss the similarities and differences with their classmates. So there's a lot of different ways they can share their final sketch note for others. I have found that it doesn't work that well to have them share in the breakout room. It really works better to have it the students share them, you know, using some kind of video. And something like Flipgrid can work really well for this as well. Students can also make sense out of information visually using a shared sketchnote concept. In Making Thinking Visible, the authors share the concept of a chalk talk protocol. It's similar to the graffiti board, if you've ever done that in person. In an online space, you can use an annotated whiteboard. It's an option on Zoom, or they can do it on Jamboard as a shared thinking space. So there's a lot of different ways. You can also have them use sticky notes, but it's kind of like creating a concept map for everyone to add to at the same time. And if it's not a concept map, you could have an essential question that they answer, and they all sketch on it, draw on it, add to it, type on it, whatever it may be. It looks messy, but it captures the thinking of the entire class. And they really begin to learn from one another. Idea number three, create structures to help organize their thinking. As students make sense out of their ideas, they can begin to organize information visually. This might sound like, this might be something like a spreadsheet or a graph. It could be an outline, a slideshow, a Venn diagram, any kind of graphic organizer, a flowchart, a table. And I love using questions to provoke this at the same time. So you're using structures with that have a visual component, but you can also have these guiding questions. So for example, in Making Think Invisible, there's the questions, how is the artwork or object connecting to something you already know about? What new ideas or impressions do you have that extend your thinking in new directions? And what is challenging or confusing? And again, that works really well in something like a table. But again, having students look, doing compare and contrast, using a Venn diagram, all of that works really well. And we can be doing that in our virtual meetings. You know, have students pull out a sheet of paper and do that, and then hold the paper up for others. Or take a snapshot and post it to the learning management system. I have a process for brainstorming that's highly visual that you can check out in the sketch video. But then when they're done with that, there's this great compass option that you can create as a graphic organizer with, northeast, southwest. And so you have E is excited, what excites you about this idea? And you do this after students have been generating ideas and brainstorming. This works really well in, project-based learning, design thinking. Worrisome, what do you find worrisome about this idea or proposition? What is the downside? Need to know, what else do you need to know or find out about this idea or proposition? What additional information would help you evaluate things? S is stance or suggestion for moving forward. What is your current stance or opinion? What suggestions do you have? And this works really well as a guided graphic organizer. And what you can do is you can have students fill this out on a Google Doc, fill out the graphic organizer on a Google Doc. You can create a template for each group. And they can have their conversation and discussion in a breakout room, but all of the students are on the same graphic organizer at the same time. And there's a lot of different ways that you can do that as well. So the fourth idea is to use visible thinking to help students reflect on their learning. Students can use visible thinking strategies to just make sense out of how they're doing in their learning. I love this in a recent podcast episode of How I Built This. Tim Ferriss described, how he became good at ballroom dancing, or I think it was tango. And he said he watched a lot of video of himself in his performance and reflected on what worked and what didn't work. I've done this by, it feels cringy at times, but listening to my own podcast to hopefully make it more interesting or better, watching video of when I'm giving keynotes. We have a hard time getting outside of ourselves. And so capturing it on video can really help us reflect on our learning. And students can do the same thing if it's PE, if it's STEAM, if it's art, music, anything performance-based. They can be video recording themselves and then reflecting on how they're doing, comparing it to another video so that they can catch their mistakes. All of that is helpful for them in that personal assessment process, and they're owning that process, and the learning is becoming visible for them because they can physically see it as if they're there in the moment, but of course it's video recorded. And so the idea is to get students to make videos and of their performances and reflect on that. And that works really well in distance learning. In fact, I would argue that is one of the advantages of having students work at home, is that they can make those videos at home while they perform and they're in their own. So those are the four different ideas for how we can make visible thinking a priority in virtual learning. Visible thinking is ultimately about more than merely the protocols found in Making Thinking Visible. I love that book. In fact, I love both of the visible thinking books. But really, it's what happens anytime a student makes sense out of their thinking by making it visible, whether that's a graphic organizer, a conversation, a sketch, a video recording of a performance. And this visible thinking process can help students make sense out of what they're thinking and how they're thinking, which can help with the retention of information, as well as the deeper understanding of concepts. Along the way, students have a deeper sense of ownership over their thinking process, and really they're using something that they can use for the rest of their lives. And this will help them develop into empowered learners. This is especially important in virtual learning, where you as a teacher can't always be physically present. But more importantly, it's the kind of thing that they will use for the rest of their lives. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.